Well, good evening.
Handouts?
No, actually, I don't have any handouts for two reasons. First one is that this what we're fixing to go through is more of just a an opportunity for you to get a general idea, not to study individual things. I can give you some of the surahs from the Quran later, or if you want to write them down, you can get a copy of the Quran yourself and figure it out. Also, I just haven't had time to put notes together. I was out of town this weekend, and I've been really busy and just converting my PowerPoints over into notes. Actually takes me a while, and because I'm real picky, and I just haven't got that accomplished yet. But I can get notes for you later. I'm going to try tonight to do a short version of Islam, a religion of peace. And here's why I want to cover this. Because recently someone in the church, we were discussing something, they said, but I thought Islam was a religion of peace. And so we're going to ask the question, is it or is it not? And if we get through with this in time, then we're going to try to tackle the problem of evil, which is a little bit more of a substantive issue. But hopefully we can give you a few ideas about how to go about attacking the problem of evil. So, to begin, is Islam a religion of peace? Now, this is by Frank Turek. This is not my PowerPoint, and so you'll notice it has lots of pictures and lots of things like that. I suspect that they just go online and download them. I don't do that because I don't know if it's copyrighted or not, and I can't afford to buy a picture, so everybody else has prettier PowerPoints than I do. I'm just assuming that they get them off the internet. But anyways, recent Islamic terrorism outside Israel. There's a whole string of events, such as the Munich Olympics in 72, all the way up to the present time, of things that have happened as a result of terrorism instigated by Muslims. Now, what is the common argument that you hear in the news media? Or that you even hear our president saying that in spite of all of this, this doesn't really represent Islam. Why?
They're just extremists.
They're just extremists.
They're a faction.
Islam has been hijacked by radicals, right? We've heard that over and over and over again, that the radicals and extremists have hijacked a moderate, peaceful, peace-loving religion. And although I support President Bush on a lot of things, on a few issues, I'm quite at odds with him, and this is one of them. I do not believe in painting Islam as a moderate, peace-loving religion, and you'll see why once we get done with this. So is Islam a religion of peace? Well, first of all, we need to talk about Islam real quickly. We're going to talk about what does Islam teach. And then we're going to ask a question, what does the media say about this question that we're putting before you, is Islam a religion of peace? And then we're finally going to look at the evidence to see what does it show about Islam. So what does Islam teach? First of all, Islam teaches that there's one God, Allah, and the Arabic word for God is Allah. And if you go to a Christian Arab church, you will hear them praying to Allah because that's the name of God. It's not Allah is not just the name of the Muslim God. So they have a radical monotheism, though. Radical idea that God is one, and there are no persons in the Godhead. That there's no Son of God. There's no kind of division among the persons of God. So they reject the Trinity, and that is really one of their strongest fanatical beliefs. They really get upset when you convey the idea that there may be persons within the Godhead. Second of all, they believe there's a whole bunch of prophets out there, including Moses, Abraham, Jesus, Adam, some that you never heard of, and finally, the last and greatest prophet would be Muhammad. Third, they believe there are angels, both good and bad. And so there's a lot of angelic type thinking in their religion. You know, they really deal with that a lot. Fourth, they believe that the Quran is the Word of God. And they believe that the Bible and the New Testament They believe that the Pentateuch, the Psalms, and the Gospels are the Word of God, but in corrupted form. That they've been corrupted by the Jews and the Christians. But they do believe that they were the Word of God. In fact, they get a lot of their information from the Bible. And so it's very very kin to what Scripture teaches. And they would be, in the worldviews, when we talked about worldviews in the first or second session, they would be theistic. They would believe in the God that created the heavens and the earth, and He's outside the heavens and the earth, but He's active in it. They would be, on that level, they'd be exactly like us as far as theism goes. And then they believe in a final day of judgment with the result of heaven and hell. So that's their basic five. It's a pretty simple religion. There's not a whole lot more to it than that, other than just moral things and some things like that. But there are some practices that they have. And first one is Shahada. That means to, and I know I'm not saying that right at all, but it means to recite the creed. And the creed is, there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is His messenger. So if you recite that and mean it in your heart, you're a Muslim. That's all you have to do. It doesn't mean you've been transformed. It doesn't mean anything's happened except that you have submitted your will to Allah. And that's what it's all about. Salat means to pray five times a day toward Mecca. And so that's why they have you hear the music on the minarets, coming off the minarets. It's because they're calling them to prayer, and they face Mecca because Mecca is considered to be a holy place, the holy city. And Psalm, I don't even know how you say that. That's to fast 1 month a year, the ninth lunar month of the year, Ramadan. And they fast only during the day. So at night, you can do whatever you want. You want to get drunk, go right ahead. You want to eat all you want to eat, go right ahead. But during the day, you don't eat anything or drink anything. You fast. And then zakat is to give 1/40th or 2.5% of their income to the poor. And hajj, to make the pilgrimage once in their lifetime to Mecca in Saudi Arabia. So that's basically their practices. And like I said, it's a pretty simple religion. Not a whole lot of pizzazz there. It's not real complicated. God is God. He's radically God. There's no division within Him. Doesn't have a son, any of that kind of stuff. And all you got to do is say the words and you're a Muslim, if you mean it in your heart.
Go ahead.
Well, Muhammad claimed to be the last final great prophet to bring the last great final religion to man. They would claim that Islam has always existed, even before, you know, the time that Muhammad came. They would say that Moses was a Muslim, Abraham, Jesus, all of them were Muslims, and they would say that when Muhammad came along, he brought the final revelation to humanity. Now, that's real familiar if you know anything about Mormons. In fact, they have the same basic story. Both Muhammad and Joseph Smith claimed to have an encounter with an angel, and in which they were presented with some reading material that they themselves could not read. Muhammad because he was illiterate, Joseph Smith because it was in a different language. So they're presented with these materials and miraculously taught how to read. Or not taught, but given the capacity to read. And so then they receive the final great religion or revelation in the world and the final religion. So they have very similar stories because, you know, I guess Satan got tired of making things up, so he just repeated himself. In fact, he's done that quite a few times in history. He repeats himself regular. Has that got a really bad feedback?
It's better now.
Okay. They may have, I think, more likely, both of them are real experiences that they had. That Muhammad, this is why I believe Muhammad had a real experience. He didn't think it was God. He was in a cave, encountered a spirit, went home and told his wife, "I think I'm possessed of the devil." And she said, "Oh no, that's not the devil, that's God." Okay. So he goes back, and he still thinks that. After a while, he's convinced by the Spirit and by his wife that he's a prophet. And I think Joseph Smith probably had some similar experience, some spiritual encounter You know, that, and I think Satan's just repeating his story. Now, they may have borrowed them, because Mormons are known for that in their history. They borrowed their whole temple worship from the Masons. So, I mean, you know, it's not like they haven't borrowed from other religions. So they may very well have. But Joseph Smith might have counted on people not knowing anything about Islam when he borrowed that. I don't know. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, I wasn't going to try to cover everything tonight on the derivation of Islam and the origins, but they do claim that they are descendants of Ishmael, but now that's a problem for like the Persians, because they're not the Iranians, they're Persians. So there are some Arabs that can claim to be descendants of Ishmael, but the Palestinians can't. Why not? What's the word Palestinian reminds you of? Palestine. Biblical name. Philistines. So the Palestinians are the Philistines. Can't even say it. Or how about Ammon, Jordan? What does that remind you of? Ammonites. It's the old Ammonite kingdom. So these people groups don't necessarily all descend from Ishmael and Esau. Or Esau.
And that's where they came.
Mm-hmm.
Everything where Jacob is, where Isaac is, Ishmael should have been in place there already.
Right. The Ishmael is the chosen one, and that the Jews corrupted that and changed it. It's exactly the opposite of the truth. You know, that all the curses that happened to Ishmael were really blessings that happened to them, and so forth and so on. So the pilgrimage to Mecca. Now just look at that. That is really, to me, a pretty amazing thing that. These people are actually gathered here in this from all over the world around this central stone. And guess what they're doing? They're throwing rocks at the devil. That somehow or another, I don't know what, the devil's supposed to be there in the center or something, and they throw rocks at him. I think this is the one. It might not be this event here, but there's one of the events where they all gather and circle around and throw rocks at the devil. So there's some peculiar things about Islam. In fact, you will find that they're very, very superstitious. If you read this book, Now They Call Me Infidel, this is one of the most enlightening books I've ever read when it comes to cultures and religions and all that good stuff, because this lady was born in Egypt. She's now an American. She rejects jihad, terrorism, and even Islam in favor of America, the war on terror, and Israel. So she's pro-Israeli. But I don't think she... It says on the back that she's a Christian, but I didn't get that out of the book at all. But anyways, it's a very good book to enlighten you to how superstitious at least Egypt is. How superstitious, caught up in a lot of crazy ideas and stuff. And it's a very interesting book. So there's a lot of superstition in Islam. They really are envious and because... are guarding against envy, I mean, because they believe in the evil eye, and you know, if someone looks at you wrong, or you can't be happy in front of people because they may envy you and give you the evil eye and curse you, and so you hide everything. And I think that's part of the root of their hatred of America. They envy, at least the religion promotes envy, or their culture does, towards America. And because America is blessed and has all these good things, and only Muslims should be like that, it's an affront to their pride. So what does the media say about Islam? Well, World Magazine did an article, and they kind of exposed what the media had to say about some various religions. And this is kind of a few of the things that they said that the general media was promoting. That the word Islam means peace. And that Islam is a religion of peace. And that Islam only fights in self-defense. And that Islam teaches tolerance. So this is kind of this is what World Magazine has surveyed and said. This is the general viewpoint of the media in America and even probably most of Western society towards Islam. This is who they believe Muslims to be. And so therefore, when they see radicals, they've hijacked the true religion. Is that the case? Well, what does the evidence show? Well, let's look at evidence from the meaning of the word Islam, the life of Muhammad, history, the Quran, and recent Muslim actions. There was one more in there called the Hadith, which is another holy book. I cut that out just for time's sake. But there, even in the Hadith, this other book that they hold to, there's a whole lot that we could look at as far as evidence. The meaning of the word Islam. What do you think Islam means? Has anybody heard what Islam means? Does anybody know?
It means peace.
Means peace. It's exactly what most people say. It means peace. In fact, the word, it comes from two different words. One of them, or it's two words put together. One of them does have the idea of peace, but altogether, it really means submission. Or you'll have peace through submission. In fact, the word Muslim means submitted one. Submitted to what? The will of Allah. Because the will of God is a radical concept in Islam. That submission to God is the evidence that you're a Muslim. In other words, that's why when you say there is but one God, there's no other God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet, you've just submitted your will to him by acknowledging that. So that's all you have to do, is become submitted. The submission is to Allah who commanded them to kill. In other words, it is not a meaning of, it does not mean peace, because you are submitting yourself to a God who commands you to kill in order to propagate the religion. And you're to kill those who convert from Islam and those who oppose Islamic beliefs. Now, we're also going to look at evidence from the life of Muhammad. Muhammad was alive around 600 A.D. I think he died in 632 A.D. And he grew up around Mecca and thrived in there. And then he began to have his visions and encountered this spirit. And his wife convinced him that he was a prophet of God. And so he was born in Mecca around 570 A.D. And he received his first revelation about 610. Then from Mecca, he fled to Medina because no one was paying attention to what he had to say, and they were persecuting him. Now, it's interesting to note that during this period, he was very peaceful. He tried peaceful persuasion. He promoted peaceful ideas. He even encouraged the Jews to read their books. He honored Jews and Christians. It was very peaceful. But after he fled to Medina, his followers began to grow, and that was from 622 to 630. But then in 630, he took Mecca by force. So he had become a warrior at this point, and then he died in AD 632. So in the last 2 years, he had gone back and conquered Mecca and reigned over Mecca for the last 2 years of his life. Go ahead. Oh, was it not on there? Let me back up where we can. That might be Mecca there, Makkah. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I just Saudi Arabia. I didn't put this thing together. I think that would be because all Medina, is that how you say it? That would be Medina is in English and Mecca down below that. So the point is that he had two different periods of his life, of his religious life. He had a period that preceded his flight from Mecca and a period that followed that. Now, in Medina, he actually became the political ruler after about a year. And they would actually go out and raid caravans. This is their prophet. He goes out and raids caravans and stuff. So all of a sudden, he has to begin justifying the use of force. Because he's a political leader, first of all, so now he's wed religion to the state. And anytime you wed religion to the state, you're going to have problems. Because then the state has a compelling reason to enforce religious beliefs. And it's happened every time in Christianity when we wed the church to the state, you start killing people. Because we got to stop the heretics. How are you going to stop them? You got to shut them up, you're going to kill them. Well, same thing happened with Muhammad. So he began to command or condone killing. He commanded or condoned unbelievers in general, a Jew who wrote poetry against him, any Jew who fell into their hands. In fact, one time he condoned the killing of 600 to 900 Jews. He killed a man who refused to help find treasure. He was allowed or condoned Meccans to be killed who satirized or insulted him. And even a one-eyed shepherd who said he would never become a Muslim. And a woman who was nursing her baby because she wrote a poem against him. Now, these are all things you can find in biographies of Muhammad. They don't really hide these things. These are common knowledge events. They talk about, discuss, and even try to justify. One of the ways they justify it is that Muhammad had to protect his reputation. He couldn't have false, slanderous accusations labeled against him because he's the last great prophet. So you had to go and put that down. And modern Muslims justify this. Even the one about the woman. So these are pretty common knowledge. They don't really deny this kind of stuff. So how about history? What was the history of Islam? Well, the first 100 years, Islam spread pretty fast. It first moved up into Persia and towards India and that way. Then it moved into Greece, and finally it moves over into Spain, reaching all the way almost into France. It really, really was moving strong. It was pretty much stopped by the Ottoman Turks, later. But in the first 100 years, it had already spread that far. Now, how did it do that? How do you think it spread that far? Killing, sword, war. So you see, from the very beginning, the spread of Islam in Muhammad's life was accomplished through war. It didn't happen when he was peaceful in Mecca. It happened after he moved to Medina, began to use force to bring people to conversion, and then went and conquered Mecca later. And then for the next 100 years following his life, the whole religion spread all over the Middle East, into Africa, and even into Europe by the use of force. In fact, today, the red pretty much covers those nations that are Muslim. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the only place Muslims are, but that's just those that are dominated by Islam. Now, how about the Quran? What does the Quran really teach? Well, there's a lot of controversy over this. Now, what if I opened up the Bible and said, God is a cruel God because He commanded Israel to go in and slaughter the people of Canaan, the Canaanites. So He's a cruel and evil God. What would you say?
False.
Well, why is it false, though? What have I done? I've taken that out of context, right? Because in context, maybe He's not cruel and evil. He did command them to go in and slaughter. We can't deny that. So we have to be careful that we don't want to take things out of context in with the Quran that we would, like people would with the Bible. So we have to understand then that the peaceful verses that are in the Quran, the historical context is they were written in Mecca. Those verses that are aggressive and talk about fighting and killing were all written after. Now, if you open up the Quran, you're not going to see that because the Quran is not organized in a chronological manner. I think it's, if I remember right, it's the bigger surahs or chapters first and go to the smaller ones or vice versa. I don't remember how it goes. But the point is that we want to be sure that we're honest about what the Quran is and what it says and what it doesn't say. But I think just a glimpse at some of the passages, even without going way in depth into their context, just to understand that these were the ones written while he was in Medina, while he was in political control, while he had a vested interest in justifying war and fighting. That's where these verses were written, or when they were written. You're to strike off the heads of your enemies. Surah 8:12. When your Lord spoke to the angels, I will be with you, therefore establish the faithful. I will cast a dread into the hearts of the infidels. Strike off their heads then, and strike them off and strike off from them every fingertip. So he's talking about infidels and unbelievers. Fight until all are Muslims, Surah 8:40, and fight with them until there is no more persecution, and religion should be only for Allah. But if they desist, then surely Allah sees what they do. In other words, if they're not going to fight against you, if they submit, become Muslims, don't kill them. Strike terror. That's their modus operandi. Surah 8:60, against them make ready your strength to the utmost of your power, including steeds of war, to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah. Now these are not necessarily, not all of these are things that we would say were unjustified if you read them in context. But just feel the weight of this as it goes on. Slay the idolaters, Surah 9:5. Then when the sacred months have passed, slay the idolaters wherever you find them, and take them captive and besiege them and prepare them for each ambush. Now that wherever you find them is important, as I'll explain in a minute. Make war against unbelievers. Fight those who do not believe in Allah, nor in the latter day, nor do they prohibit what Allah and His apostles have prohibited, nor follow the religion of the truth. Now, think about this. If the Muslims are in a land, say all the ones that are in England right now, several million, and England does not prohibit the things that Muhammad would prohibit, or to them Allah would prohibit, then they're offending Muslims. They're actually acting against Islam because they don't pass laws consistent with Islam. So therefore, they're justified in launching attacks against England because England, even though they're a majority, does not respect them to pass laws consistent with Islamic law. Now, some the moderates would argue that, no, this just means if you keep us from praying like we want to pray and if you keep us from doing this. But the radicals argue that this means that if you are not obedient to Islam, then we have a right to attack you. And they do just that. And they've done it throughout history. May Allah destroy Christians and Jews. Remember, Muhammad was in Mecca, he was very friendly towards Christians and Jews. But later on, he became very belligerent. Surah 9:30, and the Jews say Ezra is the son of Allah, and the Christians say the Messiah is the son of Allah. These are the words of their mouths. They imitate the saying of those who disbelieved before. May Allah destroy them, how they are turned away. Disbelievers fight for Satan. Those who believe fight in the cause of Allah, and those who reject faith fight in the cause of evil. So fight ye against the friends of Satan. Feeble indeed is the cunning of Satan. Allah loves those who fight. Truly, Allah loves those who fight in His cause in battle array, as if they were a solid cemented structure. Punish by crucifixion. The punishment of those who wage war against Allah and His messenger and strive with might and main for mischief through the land is execution or crucifixion or the cutting off of hands and feet from opposite sides or exile from the land. Or how about reward for jihad? Therefore, let those who fight in the way of Allah, who sell this world's life for the hereafter, and whoever fights in the way of Allah, then be he slain or be he victorious, we shall grant him a mighty reward just for fighting in the name of Allah. What about the peace verses in the Quran? We've seen a lot of the fight, 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 kill, kill, kill. This is really interesting here. Surah 252, 256 says there is no compulsion in religion. In other words, you can't force someone to become a Muslim. You can't say, become Muslim or die. They're not going to be a true Muslim, right? Well, what about this? Jews and Christians tells them to obey the Bible. Surah 5:6-8, say, O people of the book, ye have no ground to stand upon unless ye stand fast by the law, the gospel, and all the revelation that has come to you from your Lord. So here's an encouragement to stand fast by the law of Moses and the gospel. And he's encouraging Jews and Christians to hold faith to their religion, because at this point he is he's very disposed towards Jews and Christians. He has learned about monotheism from them. and he's discovered that there is one God, because he was a pagan before this. And so he had contact with Christians. In fact, he had contact with probably a heretical Christian group, which is why he rejected the Trinity, because they actually were tritheist. And so, but he's very favorable towards Christians and Jews. But what happens? Well, these verses have been abrogated. Now, when you read the Bible and you see two verses that seem to contradict each other, maybe on the surface you think, well, okay, do they contradict each other? Now why? Because everything in the Bible has to be in complete agreement, right? Because if it's not in complete agreement, it's not from God. Well, guess what Muhammad could do? He could abrogate verses. Surah 2:106. Whatever communications we abrogate or cause to be forgotten, we bring one better than it or like it. Do you not know that Allah has power over all things? In other words, if I don't like what I said before, I can bring a new revelation, or as Benny Hinn would say, you like to hear some real revelation knowledge? God drives me nuts. Anyways, he has new revelation that says, you don't have to listen to that one anymore. God can change his mind and even contradict what he said before. And guess what? All of the peace verses, or at least most of them, were written before the war verses, before the fighting and killing verses. They abrogate the peace verses. So you're not bound to those verses. You're bound to the war and the killing verses if you're a Muslim.
Isn't there another religion based in Rome that doesn't share the same thing?
Yeah, I would say so. In fact, the Mormons did the same thing too. You know, black people used to be forbidden in the Mormon church, and now they're welcome because a new prophet came along and changed the whole story about how black people came about. Surah 16:101 says, when we substitute one revelation for another, and Allah knows best what he reveals in stages, they say, thou art but a forger. I would say that too. But most of them understand not. Now, what kind of a response is that? They accuse him of being a forger because he contradicted himself from before. And he says, well, they just don't understand. Right. I understand perfectly well. You're a deceiver. And you're fooling the people.
Or Robert said that he'd seen a 100-foot Jesus, and Jesus told him he was going to come back in the year 1995 or something like that. Of course, he didn't come back. And so he changed the story. He said, well, what he really said, mm-hmm. was all in print.
Well, that same thing with the guy down in Florida at the revival down there, Brownsville Revival, prophesied Hank Hanegraaff's ministry would come down in 90 days. He says, I'm a holy man behind his holy desk, and I, you know, declare that ministry is going to come down in 90 days. 3 weeks later, after Hank got a hold of that and had it broadcast all over the place, and Hank was counting down the days, all right, let's see if it comes down. Well, I wasn't prophesying, you know. But what do you mean you're a holy man behind your holy desk declaring the word of the Lord if you're not prophesying? The bottom line is jihad, or the call for holy war, abrogates peace. In fact, Muhammad became more belligerent after he gained power. He went and justified killing and fighting, and he figured out that that was a much quicker way to spread what he believed. And so it became convenient. Now, Khomeini says, Islam says, kill all unbelievers. Kill them and put them to the sword and scatter their armies. There are hundreds of Quranic psalms and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad urging Muslims to value war and to fight. Now, who's more correct, Khomeini or the moderates? I would submit to you that there's always a radical and a liberal element in religion. Always. No matter what religion it is. In fact, to give you an example, Dr. Geisler and a friend of mine were driving down the road and they passed a Buddhist temple. And it said, the true Buddhist temple. And Dr. Geisler looked at that and looked at my buddy and said, man, they got the same problem we got. You know? There's always somebody trying to change things in religion. Or think about it this way. You got liberals in Christianity who don't really believe what the Bible says. They don't believe in the miracles. They don't believe Jesus was virgin born. They don't believe any of this stuff. They're just, you know, they're milquetoast people that want to have a feel-good, peaceful religion. You know, we're all good people and God's going to love us all. Well, the same thing's true in Islam. You got a lot of Muslims that don't really believe what the Quran teaches. They don't really hear it for what it really says. They're just milquetoast people that want everybody to get along. And so, yeah, there's a lot of Muslims who are moderate, peaceful people that have no desire to blow up anybody. But, interestingly enough, when I was reading this, after 9/11, this lady called around, and she called a bunch of her moderate Muslim friends in Egypt and asked them what they thought about the 9/11 thing. And the first thing they did was deny that it was Muslims involved, even though everybody knew it was Muslims. And then they started blaming America. Well, they deserve it. Even though they themselves would not go out and blow up anybody, we deserved it. So they tacitly approved. And you don't hear very many Muslims condemning terrorism. Almost never. They always want to somehow shift the blame and justify it. There are a few, like her, but she's not really Muslim anymore, that would reject terrorism and stuff outright. So who's right? I mean, in Jesus' time, we had the Sadducees and the Pharisees. What did the Pharisees believe? They believed the Word of God. They misused it, but they believed it. It said there's angels, there's angels. There's a resurrection, there's a resurrection. What did the Sadducees believe? Yeah. Nothing. Yeah, no angels, no resurrection. They didn't believe in anything. They just wanted to feel good. So that kind of stuff goes on forever. And I submit to you that the people who are reading the Quran correctly are not the moderates. I think it's the radicals. Because guess what? They're following the example of Muhammad. Muhammad's last sermon: I leave behind me two things, the Quran and my example, the Sunnah. And if you follow these, you'll never go astray. They're following what their master did. He used war, they used war. He used killing, they used killing. So how about recent Muslim actions? We see that this religion has produced so many terrorist attacks and disregard for life and just all kinds of things. I mean, the list just goes on and on of all the different things that have happened over the last 30 years. And you know, it is interesting to me. I watched a movie probably made in 1900 if they had them that old, but I know they didn't. But this thing was so old, and it had John Wayne as a legionnaire. It must have been the first movie he ever made. And being in a legionnaire, they were in some Arab country. And the way they escaped, I thought this was hilarious. The way they escaped their pursuers was they started a riot among the local populace. And all of a sudden, the local populace had no idea what they were rioting about. All they were doing is running around with guns, shooting things, and going, "Allah is great! Allah is great! Allah is great!" And I thought, you know, in 70-something years, nothing's changed. They're still like that. They just, "Allah is great, Allah is great," and just lose their mind over this because they're convinced that anything that confronts Islam is evil. It has to be destroyed. So what about the Crusades? Don't we have the same history? Haven't Christians done the same thing? Aren't we guilty of the same things? How would you answer those who say Christianity is no different than Islam? Look at the Crusaders. Okay, well, let's just, for a devil's advocate, let's just accept that Christianity is that represented by the early creeds, which the Catholic Church holds to and which we would hold to. And let's just say we all fall under the same umbrella at that point. Because the Roman Church under the Crusades was different than the Roman Church under the Council of Trent. And in fact, there were a lot of Christians in that church. So, what do you say? Well, first of all, there is a strong contrast. The jihad is consistent with the teachings of Muhammad in the Quran. But the Crusades were contrary to the teachings of the New Testament. Think about that. This is the logical outworking of the Quran, jihad. The Crusades are an illogical outworking of the New Testament. It's consistent with the example of Muhammad. It's contrary to the example of Jesus. The jihad is logical outworking of Islam, so forth and so on. And jihad, Islam grew by the use of the sword on others. But Christianity grew by the use of the sword on it, by being persecuted. So rather than using force and killing people to spread Christianity, Christianity was spread when Christians were being killed, by being persecuted. Quite a contrast. I mean, think about it. The Crusaders were repudiating Jesus when they launched their Crusades. The logical conclusion of Christianity, think of this, the moral outworking of what we're commanded to go and do, at least on some level. Who would you pick as a representative of Christianity if you wanted to pick the you know, modern day example of who is enacting the ethical principles of Christianity?
Billy Graham.
Billy Graham. Okay, why Billy Graham?
Okay.
He preached the gospel. I would too, but I didn't make this presentation. The point here is a little different. Who's out there doing the social part of it? Everybody in the world knows.
Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa. So, I would disagree with this because Mother Teresa didn't convert. Mother Teresa would not convince people that they were lost. But, when it comes to doing the ethical things that Jesus asked us to do, which is to look after the poor, those kinds of things. Mother Teresa is a good example. She told one administration about abortion, don't kill them, give them to me. I'll take care of them. You know? But who's the logical conclusion of Islam?
Bin Laden.
Think of the contrast. Even if you don't agree with Mother Teresa, even if you think that Mother Teresa was not converting, which I don't think she was converting, and if she was, she's probably converting to the wrong place anyways. Think of just someone who embraces the Christian ethic, whether in pretense or in truth, the difference it makes in their life compared to someone who embraces the Muslim ethic. One is saving lives, feeding people, helping people. The other one is slaughtering people. If I would have changed this, if I could have changed this and had found a picture, I would have put Franklin Graham. Because Franklin Graham is doing what Mother Teresa did and going out and with his Samaritan's Purse. Conclusion. There are many peace-loving Muslims, of course, but they are not consistent with the teachings of their prophet as evidenced by the Quran, the Hadith, which is their traditions, the life of Muhammad, or the history of Islam.
How did Muhammad die?
Muhammad died. How did he die? You know, I just read it and I cannot remember. I'm sorry. He died of disease or something. I don't remember. It escapes me at the moment. Well, real quick, let's compare the difference in martyrs. What difference does a martyr make? What comes to mind when you think of martyr? One who dies for their faith. What else? Well, in Islam, martyrs are those who go out and enforce religion and bring religion to someone by the use of the sword. In Christianity, martyrs are those who the sword is used upon. In other words, there's a difference between how the religion is spread. Martyrs in Islam kill others, but in Christianity, martyrs are killed by others. In Islam, martyrs attack, but in Christianity, martyrs are attacked. In Islam, martyrs are perpetrators. Christianity, martyrs are victims. Islam martyrs saw nothing miraculous. In other words, they don't claim miracles or anything like that. But in Christianity, several martyrs saw the risen Christ. There's a real difference between Muslim martyrs who are slain. It's one thing to die for your faith, but it's altogether a different thing to die while trying to kill others for your faith. There's nothing in that. They believe that they're going to get a one-way ticket to heaven. And some of their traditions say they'll get 70 virgins or whatnot, some different things. But the point is, they believe they'll get a one-way ticket to heaven if they die because they were out to kill others for the faith. What a difference it makes. I don't believe that Islam was a religion of peace because of the example of Muhammad and all of that history. I think that the news media is misleading us. And we need to understand that this is a major threat. The Muslim countries are some of the least missioned countries in the world. We have more missionaries in Alaska than we do to most Muslim countries. It's dangerous. You want to be a martyr, go over there. They'll more than oblige you. So we need to understand that this religion is not a peaceful religion. We're being sold a bill of goods, and we need to let people know the truth. And at the same time, not be deceived by our own news media and understand what it really is all about. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not good people in the sense of good in relation to other people in Islam that need Christ and need to be shown the gospel. Everybody does. The point that I just wanted to make is that we've been told something that's not true because there's a vested interest in not getting us all worked up over how bad Islam really is, because the nations of the West do not want a religious war. They just want to sell. They just want to make money. They're full of greed. And so we can't go and say we're in a religious war. We can only say that we're after the radicals, because we don't want to fight everybody in the Middle East. So while that's fine and dandy, and we don't want to fight everybody in the Middle East, we need to know the truth. We need to understand that Islam does not come preaching a peaceful religion of tolerance and let's all get along. In fact, they slaughter each other just as much as they try to slaughter those outside. Oh, and this is one other thing. Think about this contrast. In Islam, your son dies for God, but in Christianity, God's son dies for you. I mean, Islam asks you to send your son to go out and time after time again to die for him. Now, God asked Abram to do that, but he stopped him at the last moment. It was a test. God never went through with it. In fact, in the Old Testament, that's what God judged the nations for, was sacrificing their children to their false gods. And here's Islam, repeating history. Satan always attacks the children. Always. If he can't corrupt them, he'll kill them. Through abortion, through pagan rituals, through suicide bombings, whatever he can do to attack the children. So, any questions? How do we do on time? Not too bad. Do we go through that too fast? Any questions? Go ahead. Yes. Answering Islam is Geisler's book. The thing about Geisler is he's always fair. I don't know of anybody that I've ever studied under who is more willing to learn from the people he disagrees with. You know, and he made one comment one time about heretics. He says, oh, they're always the nicest people. You know, he was referring to somebody in particular that he was trying to get booted out of the Evangelical Association. But, you know, he said, he's a nice guy, and he's just a heretic. So he's willing to learn. And in fact, he has the most balanced exposés or understandings of, you know, the various religions when he actually writes on one like Islam or on Catholicism. He doesn't get all worked up. So you can rest assured it's the boring reading most of the time. He's not a great writer. He's very systematic, but it's going to be good, solid information. Some other books might be more interesting to read and might be more, you know, get you worked up, get you all fired up, want to go witness to these people, and guys are just going to give you information. But here's a good one here, The Islam Debate. This is Josh McDowell and Ahmed Dadat. And this is an actual debate that happened in South Africa. And the debate's not very long. It's in the back. But the first part teaches you all about Islam. And then the last part is the actual debate of them going back and forth. So those are some good books. And there's other books out there on Islam. Just try to get reputable sources. You know. Any other questions? Yeah.
And many Christians have bought into that.
Exactly.
And what happens is God wants us to know that we need to evangelize them because they're going to hell.
That's right.
There was a thing, this is back in the spring, but Larry King had, this is talking about war, and he keeps bringing people on to talk about war. You know, he had Father Manning, some Catholic priest, he had some bishop from other church, and then somebody else. He had Bob Jones Jr. from Bob Jones University, and then he had John MacArthur on there, and they were, you know, Father Manning, he's always Jesus love, he loves his people, and I'm not going to condemn them. And some other guy says, well, for me, Christianity's right. It was this whole pluralistic, everybody's right. I'm not going to tell them they need to convert, and God will take care of all that. And of course, Dr. MacArthur said that, no, there is truth. And Dr. Larry King saying, well, they believe strongly in what they believe as much in what they believe in as you do. And what do you think about that? He says, well, I can believe I can fly, and if I jump off a tall building, it doesn't mean anything. If I believe I can.
That's right.
If your faith is not based upon truth, it doesn't matter. And yet it's creeping into Christianity as a whole, and we're beginning to believe, okay, they're a religion of peace, and God will take care of all them. And your point tonight is great, very well taken, Kurt. We need to know who is it we need to evangelize. Mm-hmm. Who is it we need to share the gospel with? And we need to share the gospel with all Muslims because they're all, the Bible says, are going to hell.
That's right.
And that's very important for us to know.
And we need to understand what we're confronted with.
Yeah.
Don't be foolish in dealing with Muslims, especially if they're of the radical brand. You know, I mean, you have to be careful with them. Go evangelize them, deal with them, but just be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. Scripture teaches us. So understand who you're dealing with. Understand their mentality. You know what's interesting to me? Who's more involved in Islam, men or women? Men. Who's involved? More involved in Mexican Catholicism, men or women? Women. Now that's interesting to me. Why is it that in Mexico, the Catholic Church is filled with women, and in the Middle East, the mosques are filled with men? In fact, the men mock the women as having no religion. They hardly even go to the mosque. They're just now starting to, you know, the radicals are starting to transform that. But in the 50s in Egypt, women hardly even participated in the mosque. That was a man's place. Now, why is that? Why do you think Islam appeals to men? Aggression. It's the aggression. It's an aggressive religion. Very aggressive religion. That's kind of interesting to me.
There was a book that was written a few years ago. Tom Nelson was the one that recommended it to me. I just heard him say it in a sermon. It's called The Feminization of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's read that, that's quite a book. It's by a Catholic. He's probably not a Christian today. It's a real interesting book on the feminization of Christianity.
Yeah, and in fact, that's another one of Satan's ploys. He always wants to bring the goddess in. He always wants to bring goddess worship in. So he'll bring it in through this or that or the worship of Mary or, you know, somehow he's going to feminize religion or overly masculinize it. Not bringing into balance. Satan's always trying to bring us out of balance. That's why extremes are dangerous. Not that moderate is always right.
recommend and all that are going to be favoring that. And they'll try to convince you of that. So it's important for you to know exactly what truth is before you go into it. And even in high school.
That's right.
You know the truth before you go into it because it's so easy to learn things that your teachers are supposed to know something and you believe what they say and a lot of it is
Yep. Well, there's a lot more that we could talk about with Islam, but I was really concerned when I heard someone ask that question, thinking that Islam was religion of peace, and thinking, you know, that just seems intuitive to me that that's not the case. So let's look at that, you know, and I guess when you hear it constantly out there in the media, you kind of pick up on that. But the fact of the matter is, I believe that the evidence demonstrates that it never has been a religion of peace, except for the first 10 years of Muhammad's religious life. That's it. After that, slaughter, kill, destroy, you know, whatever. For the slightest offense against Islam, because you're oppressing Islam, I'm justified in fighting war with you. You know? All right, we got through that fairly quickly. Is everybody up for another round? Problem of evil. Anybody up for it? Raise your hand. Not too many? Couple? Everybody? Well, I tell you what, if you don't want to deal with the problem of evil, we can let some of you go, and the rest who enjoy marathons can hang. And
this might help. How long do you think?
No longer than what we just did. And if it, let's give it 30 minutes, wherever we're at, I'll wrap it up real quick. How about that? Sound good? And that'll be shorter than anything we've done so far, actually. Well, we've been talking about Islam, so let's continue with that same thought and talk about the problem of evil.